Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, as a DM, would you let somebody intentionally fail a check?
I want to do this, but... act as if I rolled a fail or like, you know.
So there's a...
I want to lean toward yes.
Okay. That's kind of where I was going to. There's a really nasty spell in that book I picked up, the Osteomancy, that I posted in the Discord, that if you fail an Arcana check, 20 DC Arcana check, it opens up a small black hole that persists, that you can't get rid of without a wish, and expands in size every week by 10 feet. Oh, sorry, month. Expands in size by 10 feet every month. It remains in existence. So... otherwise, it's instantaneous. You reach out towards a creature that is medium size or smaller, create a miniature 20-foot-wide black hole above them. Target's pulled inside, reduced to a singularity, and dies instantly, of course. Immediately after casting it, make a DC 20 intelligence arcana check. On a failure, the black hole remains where you summoned it indefinitely, barring a wish spell. Cannot be destroyed or dispelled, and expands by 10 feet for each month that remains in existence. So I was wondering, if you cast that and then chose to not pass the Arcana check and just leave a black hole somewhere.
Spells
in here are insanely destructive, but I was like, wow, I wonder if you can intentionally chose to fail it and just leave a black hole somewhere. Obviously, somebody's gonna have to get rid of it at some point before it destroys everything.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There would have to be a definite reason to want to create that black hole. If you think in a three-dimensional perspective, like, you know, I'm actually this character, I'm actually this, you know, this wizard crafting the spell, I could very easily, you know, like with a slight, like, you know, flick of my wrist, you know, not do the spell intentionally correct. And so, like, just leaving that up to the chance. Although DC 20, I mean, I guess it depends on the level needed. DC 20 is kind of high to begin with. But no, yeah, I would say so. And then see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, you realize, you know what's going to happen. I mean, there's somebody from, you know, high level magic, you know, guilds or, you know, schools, red wizards, whoever it is, is going to have to come and cast a wish to put it out of existence, or otherwise it's going to rip apart everything.
No, yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering.
And then, the gravity well that it creates as it gets bigger is just going to pull apart cities, which would be interesting. I'm like, I mean, obviously it's homebrew spells and some of the stuff in here is still nasty low level stuff, but it's like, that'd be interesting. Like if you, the Under Mountain or, Jails of Waterdeep or, Cormanther, Cormier, like big cities and just dropped a black hole underneath and walked away and right. See what happens.
Yep. Or, it's done on accident.
Yeah.
It's done on accident, but by the player, it's an intentional choice to have it done on accident to create the situation that we find ourselves in. Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you died and there's a contingency spell where it drops this on your death and just as a FU on the way out.
Right. Coffee ready to go?
Yeah, sorry.
All right, cool. All right, let's go ahead and get started.
Robots Radio presents.
You're listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast, the best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. I am your co-host, Sergio. I am actually hosting by myself all on my lonesome this week because our good friend Crit has come down with a nasty bug, that nasty pesky bug that's been plaguing just about everyone on the planet for a couple of years now. So he's down and out. He's not feeling too great. So we got some healing potions sent his way. So hopefully he'll be back next week because next week is when we discuss Multiverse of the Monsters, and we're very excited about that. But this week is our patron chat. We look forward to it every single month. We get to discuss different ideas, different themes, different questions, different discussion prompts with our patrons, with our wizard patrons and above. And this week we are joined by Lupus and Coffee. Say hello to everyone listening at home.
Hello,
Lupus, how are you doing today?
Good. Glad everybody here is healthy, and hopefully Crit gets back on his feet and back to the tower relatively soon.
If nothing else, we know how obnoxious and annoying Crit is. I don't think that level of absurdity is going to be taken down that easily. So he might be down and out for a couple of days, but he's definitely going to be back on his feet soon.
Did he try to magic too hard? Was that what happened?
He might have, yeah. He might have stayed up too late painting minis or just looking up minis and lusting over them. But
I'll try to stop at the miniature posting online.
Oh yeah, you're enabling him for sure. Yeah, Lupus is if you're not a member of the Robots Radio Discord, you definitely need to sign up. We have our own Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast text channel there, and Lupus finds all manner of things that D&D related that empty out all of our bank accounts. I can't tell you how much money I've spent on the stuff that he's posted on there. And I definitely would spend more if I could, if I had it to spend. He posted a, what was it, like $1,600?
Oh yeah, the miniature collection, $1,600. They're based somewhere outside of Atlanta. Free shipping.
So free shipping. So
I hope so.
reduce the cost, and then it was $16,000 worth of miniatures, and that was at a reduced price. It was basically a whole den of somebody's house was miniatures.
Yeah, it was like an entire room, just like almost like top to bottom of minis. Yeah.
And a lot of the bigger ones were still packaged in box, so which is keeps the price up.
This week we will be discussing it's a very interesting topic because it's really going to get us to thinking about how we play this game, D&D. We're going to talk about ideal party composition. Now, you know, the D&D is known for having all sorts of different classes. But, you know, what, how, if you're playing with a certain amount of people, like what, which classes do you want spoken for? Which classes do you think are going to benefit, you know, both combat and role playing? So let's go ahead and get started. Let's get started with Lupus, because he was actually the one who suggested this discussion idea that got my brain all percolating. So Lupus, let's say you're playing D&D, you got a DM and you've got three players. What is your ideal party composition?
Ideal party composition is, so this comes mainly from playing a lot of D&D and online MMOs or RPGs, where you have to have, and the mantra is basically, if the tank dies, it's the healer's fault. If the healer dies, it's the tank's fault. And if the DPS dies, it's their own fault. So you need...
Very true. I've played my fair share of Final Fantasy 14, and that is absolutely true.
Yeah. Basically, the healer and the tank are going to pair together to keep each other up. The DPS needs to stay on the outside and do range damage. And if they pull aggro from the BBEG or whatever the monsters are, then it's their own fault if they go down. So that being said, I would say, Barbarian, and I'm not going through, this is just general, so not not any of the subclasses, but so like a barbarian, a cleric.
Let's keep it to like your basic, you know, what you find in the player's handbook for sure.
Yeah, and a rogue. Barbarian, cleric, rogue, or rogue, paladin, cleric. So some combination of a multi-role tank. So not just a fighter, but a barbarian or a paladin, a healer, and then a DPS for three party.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty apt. Like having had, you know, a little bit of a MMO experience myself, that's pretty much the holy trinity, the holy trifecta of combat is your tank role, you know, those who can, like, tons of HP, can absorb a lot of the damage on the front lines. You have a DPS, you know, it sort of does damage, but is, you know, can move around quickly. And then obviously someone to heal them both to keep them alive because they're taking all that damage. And that's, you know, that's where the squishy comes in. That's where the cleric comes in. Coffee, what about you? What's your ideal three-person party?
I'm playing a campaign right now, and it's a three person. So what we have, now class-wise, is we have a warlock, a sea sorcerer, and an artificer. Me being the artificer.
And how's that working out for you?
I'm not sure since we only had session two like yesterday, so like just starting out essentially.
So is it bringing any benefits like role-playing wise, having sort of like, you know, it's kind of a, like they're pretty drastic. Like they're kind of different from each other, all three.
Yeah. Not sure. I said we like kind of just started out, so I guess we haven't really gotten into like the flow of it, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's something that also needs to be considered too is, you know, like role-playing wise, you know, if you have like, I'm in a campaign and the DM was like, you know, like there's like kind of like two schools of thought when you're starting up a game. You've got players who are like, well, I kind of like, you know, what role needs to be filled, kind of like if you've got a couple of tanks, a DPS but no healer, like, okay, well, I'll take on the role, I'll be a cleric or something. And act as that person, act as, you know, fill that role. And then like whenever I DM, I try not to, I tell players to just play whatever you want. You know, don't feel like you need to fill a role, to, you know, check a box or anything. You know, I want you to play what you want, because then you'll have the most fun. And as DM, I, you know, I won't cater the game to them, but I mean, I kind of will in a sense, you know, I won't, I'll, you know, obviously if I'm DMing a party with, you know, without a healer and very little, you know, the characters don't have very many healing traits, you know, obviously, like, I'm going to let healing potions be more plentiful, and but also let them know that let them know that it's they're going to have to figure their way around that sort of that lapse. And so, you know, I'm in a campaign right now. We have two bards. Why would any party have two bards? Because two of the guys wanted to play bards. And so we're like, sure, why not do it? And so role-playing wise, it can be like combat wise, obviously, like it's a little redundant, but role-play wise, it can be fun because you kind of have like these two characters trying to like one up each other, like in their bard style. But we're I'd agree with Lupus is like that tank DPS healer sort of combo is ideal for a three person party. Now the four person party, like, you know, this is like you get the generic party as it's known. You have a cleric, a fighter, a rogue, and a wizard. Like, I remember playing Final Fantasy for the very first Final Fantasy game for the first time. That's like exactly what you get, like, as your party makeup. You get a fighter, you get a monk, which was kind of known as a monk. You get a rogue, also known as a thief, and you get a wizard. And depending on, usually there's red wizards, there's white wizards, and black wizards. But yeah, you get some sort of spellcaster. So that's kind of what's known as the generic party. You know, you with the cleric, you get, you know, you get sort of that tanky role, but also with healing. Fighter obviously get someone who, and fighter and rogue, you get someone who can deal out damage, but also like move around, sort of dictate the flow of the battle. And then of course wizards, you have some sort of magic user, some sort of spell caster. Lupus, for a four person party, what do you like to see the most?
So the larger the party get, or that's still small, so you still need multi-role.
For sure, yeah. Like
when you get bigger parties, you can have individual, but like, yeah, you really want multi-role of like a druid, a rogue, a ranger, and a paladin. So you've got multi-role fighters. The ranger and a rogue are both DPS. The paladin can tank, but then the druid can also tank. And heal. The paladin can also heal, so you've got multiple makeups of multi-roles for survivability, and it goes a little outside of the typical healer, fighter, wizard, and thief combination. Yeah, I think that would be my ideal for both roleplay and survivability. Would be the ranger, thief, pally, and druid.
Interesting. So a ranger, a rogue, a paladin, and a druid. So like, yeah. No, I mean, yeah, like you said, like with a party that small, you sort of have to, everyone sort of has to do a couple of different things. But yeah, it's interesting that you not a like dedicated spellcaster, no, like no wizard, no sorcerer, no warlock. That's interesting.
No, I think at lower levels, you're going to need the multi-healers for survivability, multi-tanks, and multi-DPS. You really don't need, at low levels, sorcerers, wizards, warlocks, they're usable only to an extent because they burn out on spells so quickly, and then after that it's like, depending on what subclass they've picked for you know, if you're at third level or fifth level.
Right.
But you know, your multi-healers, multi-DPS, multi-tanks are going to keep the group alive.
What about you, Coffee? When it comes to four players, what do you think is the best party makeup? Oh, you're muted.
I've never played it with anything above like three, so yeah, not sure what to really say about that.
Well, like I think, you know, Luke. Oh, sorry. Hold on one sec. They're going nuts.
Kids are home.
Yep. Okay, you were saying?
I would say, I guess, kind of go with kind of what Lupus has been saying. With, you know, tank and DPS and healer.
But yeah, I think
like a redundant for one of them, just in case.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like have you know, like I think there's wisdom in having in a, you know, four is, I guess what could be considered like the standard size party, but still I think it's small because oh my word. You know, I think it's small. The four would be considered, you know, the standard size party, but even then I think it's small because, you know, like Lupa said, like each player is going to have to do more than one thing. You know, it's you know, if you have a cleric or if you have someone who wants to heal, they're also going to have to get, you know, you have to get down and dirty sometimes. And so you just can't have like a full on cleric. You're probably going to have to get a paladin. And, you know, if you want, and so then you, if you want to just smash stuff, you know, barbarian's great, but, you know, barbarian's like, it's like a blunt object. You know, you're going to, with only four players, you're going to want something a little bit more, you know, with some finesse.
Because you got to keep that barbarian alive with the paladin combination. He can keep himself up. And then the cleric can help and help co-tank.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a rogue or a ranger comes in handy. And even then, you know, especially with rangers and druids, you know, they get, you know, they're not dedicated spellcasters. Well, I guess a druid sort of is, but and not in the sense of like a warlock or a wizard or a sorcerer. But, you know, rangers do eventually get access to their own set of spells, which aren't too shabby. You know, rangers are, you know, I think they sort of have the reputation as just being like, you know, like a ranger that's like an elf archer for, you know, that's pretty much all it is. But they're actually pretty cool whenever you like really dig into like the options that are available to them and, you know, what kind of spells they have access to.
Well, they gave new classes for rangers in Fizzbands, right? That kind of expanded the playability. It's like a Gloomstalker and like a Warden or something like that. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up, but yeah.
I mean, that was one of the great things, and they're slowly starting to get to this to that point. But that was one of the great things about, you know, 3.5, like third edition and 3.5, is there were so many different subclasses for all sorts of stuff. If you're like, I want to be a ranger that only hunts like undead, like bam, like you got something. You're like, I want to be a ranger that only like hunts like drow or elementals. Like you're more than likely you'd find like that subclass in one of the many different, you know, supplemental books for that edition. But before we move on any further, we're going to go into the middle of the show where we will discuss a couple different things. No minis, of course, because, you know, Crit's the mini guy and I don't want to upset him by talking about minis when he's not around. But we do have a couple other things on tap. So we'll be right back. Welcome to the middle of the show. This is where we generally talk about minis. usually talk about cool stuff on the DMs Guild website, but we always thank our patrons. We want to thank all of our patrons, especially, of course, Lupus and Coffee for joining us this week. We also want to thank Tex, who couldn't be with us, prior obligations, as well as Climbing Zebra, Danny P., Remington Cloutier, Wolf the Sheepdog, and Jonathan Sutter. Thank you all so much for contributing financially to help grow the show. If you like what we're offering, like the content we produce, and want to help in that way, you can go to patreon.com/dndlorecast. All sorts of cool stuff. You can get the show a day early. You can get it ad-free. You can get bonus episodes, t-shirts, stickers, painted minis from Crit himself. You could have one-on-ones with me and Crit where we discuss, you know, help you build a campaign, help you build a campaign setting, help you write a campaign, help you hone your DM skills. You know, Crit and I both have extensive experience DMing. So like I said, you can do to access all those features, patreon.com/dndlorecast. And if you are unable to contribute in that way, you know, just listening is more than enough, more than we could ask for. We want to thank you for listening, for suggesting it to a friend who may enjoy it. That this very much is a labor of love. We'd be doing this. I mean, I've been talking about D&D for years now. It's just only recently that everyone is subject to having to listen to it. Just, you know, it's not just, you know, my friends around me and my wife. You know, my wife is, you know, when I told her I was going to start co-hosting the D&D Lorecast, she was like, great, that's 1 hour out of the week where, like, I'm not listening to it. Somebody else has to. So thank you so much once again for helping out. For our DMs Guild corner of the week, this was actually something I mentioned earlier in the show, that Lupus is a house on fire when it comes to suggesting D&D material on the Robots Radio Discord. And he suggested something that I hadn't seen before. It's called, So a Cleric and a Vampire Walk into a Tavern. Now, this is it's an anthology of sorts. It's a series of short encounters and story hooks that may cause your party to question the safety of their local tavern. Now, this is designed for characters of all levels, because, like I said, they're mostly just like story hooks. Like there's something that happens in your local tavern that will then, you know, produce some sort of short adventure. And it's, you know, it's, there's a, let's see, close to, I'd say like a dozen different adventures, each of them with a different writer. And these are all folks that have already, you know, already have several DM Guilds credits to their name, or, you know, veteran D&D players. So these are all folks that know what they're talking about. And the first one's like what really caught my attention. It's where the book gets its name, A Cleric and a Vampire Walk into a Tavern. You overhear a cleric and a vampire having some sort of disagreement of sorts. And what you find out is that these two were at one point lovers and, you know, set to be married until the vampire, you know, turned, and then obviously, left normal living civilization and joined the undead. Their lover, you know, distraught by what happened, turned to the gods and became a cleric, but has now sort of lost their faith and wants to get back to their former love and wants to become a vampire so they can be together forever. And so that's how it starts off. That's how the adventure hook starts off. Depending on how the DM wants to play it out and depending on how to progress it. and how the party wants to role play it out could lead to any number of ways. And that's what's really interesting about, that's what really caught my attention about this, this offering, is that they're very simple hooks. They're very interesting hooks. And, but you know, the possibilities of where they could lead are almost endless. Best of all, it's free. It'll cost you absolutely nothing on dmsguild.com. We will post a link to it in the show notes. Check it out. Definitely check it out. I mean, can't get better than free 99, right? I think it's a good idea. Well, let's go ahead and jump back into our conversation about ideal party makeup. Welcome back to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. Now we're going to discuss, in keeping with the, we're going to continue our ideal party composition conversation. We've discussed the ideal party for 3 players and for 4 players. Now we will discuss the ideal composition for 5 players and up. Now this is where it gets interesting, because at this point you can't, like, unlike before, where every player sort of had to fill a couple different roles, you know, be it melee and healer, or spell casting and tank. You know, at this point, you can sort of have specialized roles. And so if you have, Lupus, if you have a campaign party of 5 or more, you know, what do you like to see? Both, I mean, I guess in terms of combat and role-playing wise.
So I think it's contingent on level, but so lower levels, this is kind of where you can have the wizards and the bards come in, wizards, sorcerers, warlocks, the glass cannons kind of over the party, as it were, especially at lower levels, because there's enough going on to protect them and keep them around and make them useful for, the infinite amount of cantrips they can cast, or, you know, the few handful of spells that they can use to augment what's going on with the party. So, like, for 5, basically the same basic makeup of, you know, cleric, fighter, DPS, so ranger or rogue, and then add in a warlock, and then, like, another multi-role. At higher levels, for Adventures League, I've done entire parties of just casters. It was 5. High elf wizards, and then 1 tiefling warlock, I think, or sorcerer. And it basically just turned into a burn team. We were just annihilating everything that we ran into. It was, you know, my caster specifically is a evocation specialist, so I can bend spells around people. So you can drop a fireball on the party and not hurt the party and just incinerate everything else. which is super fun, especially when you don't tell the rest of the party that first. And they're like, wait, you're going to do what?
Like, just like, trust me. Hold on. No.
Yeah. But you've already discussed it with the DM. Like, they know, you know, what your subclass is, and that you can, you know, bend evocation spells or sculpt, as it were, in the book. So you're like, I'm just going to drop a fireball. And everybody's like, what are you doing? It's not going to hurt anybody. How is that possible? Did you read the book? What?
The book? Like, sure I did.
Yeah. Evocation specialist. So with that, you can get into more very specialized casters, like whole parties of casters, half parties of, say, barbarians and a couple of clerics, and then light DPS. So I'd say for 5 or 6, druid fighter, paladin, rogue wizard sorcerer, or rogue wizard warlock, dependent. A couple casters, a couple, 1 specific healer, 1 multi-healer, 1 heavy DPS, and 1 tank.
No, yeah, I was going to say, like, once you get into a bigger party, like, the the campaign where, like I said, that like I mentioned earlier, we have two bards. There's six of us in that party, so it can definitely afford to have two bards. You know, it's you know, if you have four players and two of them are bards, I don't think you're getting past level two, maybe not even level one. But you know, we have a druid, we have a paladin, we have a ranger, and we have a rogue. So we have like, you know, a good foundation, you know, plus like two silly bards who like to sing songs, and you know, cast Thunderclap over and over, or Thunderwave rather. You know, and I remember the first time I played, I played a bard. It was in a four player party, and I did not have a good time at all. The bard class, and they definitely have beefed it up in fifth edition. It's definitely a lot easier to play, but you know, when I played it the first time with, you know, in 3.5, and I just felt like I couldn't do much. You know, I was like a jack of all trades, master of none sort of thing. But yeah, so it, you definitely need, for those really specialized classes, like your spellcasters, like your bard, you know, it definitely helps to have other classes to lean on. Like Coffee, if you, let's say you had, let's say you had a handful of people playing with you, and, you know, not including the DM, if you could play any class because, you know, the party is so large, what would you want to play?
I think, now this is personally, I like to play video games. I like to play video games like ranged.
Right.
So I'd probably play like a ranged class, like a ranger, if a DM allows an artificer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd probably like how I'd play it. That's kind of how I am playing it in this campaign I'm in, so I like that.
And you know, Lupus brought up, you know, he says he was in a party that was nothing but spellcasters. You know, that's, I've never done anything like that, so that's really interesting to me, is molding. And but it, in a way, it also makes sense, in like a sort of like when you're like thinking about it in a more logical way, like, you know, like it's more logical that four wizards are going to be hanging out together than a wizard and a fighter and a rogue. You know, it's like, yeah, you have like the tried and true hook of like everyone like meeting up, like being in the same tavern at the same time and saying like, oh, I'll answer the call to battle, like, so will I. And that's how this party of, you know, of you know, people who normally wouldn't mix get together. But in all actuality, it makes more sense that it'd be, you know, four rogues, like, you know four friends that, you know, run around like robbing from people, robbing houses, you know, getting into shenanigans like that, or four wizards, you know, four buddies from you know, from Strixhaven, or, you know, four fighters, you know, get together and like, and take, loan themselves out as mercenaries. So like, yeah, it's more, it's obviously not as common, but it makes a whole lot of sense. So if you, Coffee, if you had to play in a party that was just one class, what would you think would be the most fun, and which would you, do you think would be the most difficult?
I'm saying rogue would probably be the most fun.
Rogue would be a lot of fun.
And then for most difficult, I'm not sure about that one. I'd say possibly Bard.
I was leaning toward Bard, and I was thinking, well, it also kind of depends on the adventure. And then I started thinking about, like, you know, like a Beatles type band that, you know, travels the, you know, that travels Faerun, and like everyone loves them. And then they are also like, you know, solve crimes, like, you know, when they're not playing on stage. And so I think that might be something that I've been wanting and thinking of how to contribute to the DMs Guild. And I think that might be one of my first forays. But I mean, yeah, like I said, it was, for me, I would say I'd say Rogue probably be the most fun. I think Monk also would be a lot of fun. You know, have a handful of monks, you know, from the same like temple, going out and sort of, you know, like sort of like a Kung Fu, The Legend Continues sort of like vibe, but like, you know, a team rather than just, you know, David Carradine by himself. But yeah, I'd say probably Bard or Druid might be the most difficult. What about you, Lupus? What do you think?
Most difficult, I think, would probably Bard.
Even after my Beatles idea?
Even after your Beatles, okay, but you were doing a party of bards individually in a party because you are so multi-role and non-specific, but then also you're the face of the group generally because of the charisma, unless it's one of the charisma based casters like Sorcerer Warlock. So that you're going to do all the interaction in town. I mean, it's going to be like Witcher. Like, you're going to be Dandelion. You're going to have to talk to everybody. You're not going to be specifically great at anything, but you're going to fill in all the gaps. You're the shortstop. So, I mean, that for me, that would be probably the most difficult, would be Bard in any group and not be able to specifically do any one thing well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so what would you think would be the most fun? You've already talked about how you had an all wizard party and that was a blast for you. What beyond that?
The most fun I've had playing is in the Ravenloft Adventures Guild or Adventures League, is a investigative rogue. So it's basically the Sherlock Holmes trope. High intelligence. You still have all the basic rogue build, but you're not specifically great like a thief or, you know, some of the other ones that, you know, delve into heavy backstab, like ninja assassin kind of stuff.
Right.
You're more, I can see everything. I remember generally everything. When we come into problems, you know, I can figure it out or use my checks to help figure it out. But in a fight, yeah, it's just a basic rogue. So a little more heavy role playing.
No, and I think especially at lower levels, with the parties that are all of one class, you know, the role playing is definitely going to be, it's going to come more naturally, I feel, because like I said, like while like in combat, having two druids, you know, can be kind of redundant, the way they role play, the way they bounce off of each other is a lot of fun. You know, they'll like, you know, one of them will start singing a song and the other will like, you know, either make fun of it or join in. In fact, one of them is like, that's how they met and came into a party. They're actually competing in a battle of the bands. I think, you know, one of them performed really well and the other one actually rolled really badly. And so I think the one who did well, like, took pity on the other one, and then they both ended up joining the party. But yeah, like I said, it just makes logically more sense that you would have like, you know, like four rogues, four rangers, four monks, whatever it may be, hanging out together. I think, like I said, the role-playing possibilities are more natural and are easier at that point. The combat might be a little shaky to start off with, but eventually once you start, you know, getting higher levels and getting access to more traits and more skills and possibly even spells, then, you know, that sort of evens itself out. And it also depends on I'm not a DM who likes, you know, is going to hold my player's hand the entire time and, you know, not allow them to get killed. But I'm also, you know, like the whole point of the game is to have fun. And, you know, this is what makes D&D so much fun is it's so many different kinds of games at once. You know,
I mean, what's your class in our Patreon group? I mean, because that's only a party of two, which is uncommon.
What am I? It's been a while.
I mean, I love animals.
I'm a bard. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah.
I think I'm a bard. Well, there's a reason for that too. Let me look at my character sheet. I'm a monk. I'm a monk bard. There's a reason for that. It all has to do with the lore and the history of Atreus, which is the campaign setting that Crit has created for both the Patreon game and for Fumbling for the Almighty Crit. What was I saying? You got me all backwards thinking about James Donnybrook. When I was going to say, you know, there's the role-playing possibilities are a lot more fun. I was talking about me as a DM. So I'm not going to hold my players' hands. But, you know, what's so great about D&D is that it's so many games at once. You know, it's you get the social aspect. You get the role-playing aspect. You get the combat and the strategy. You know, it's not, you know, you can, you know, run into a room, you know, kick the door open and just, you know, murder hobo your way to the next encounter. Or you can try to figure out a way around it, either by skipping the encounter entirely or by molding the encounter to be more to your benefit. And so I think that, you know, for players to have the most amount of fun, there definitely needs to be some sort of element of not like danger, but you know, they has to it can't be too easy for them, more or less. You know, if it's too easy, then and when I mean too easy, I'm specific talking about combat. Now obviously there are campaigns and there are adventures that are almost entirely based on role playing, kind of like the rogue Sherlock Holmes adventure you're talking about. You know, you see that's very role play heavy, but for the most part, you know, there's going to be a mixture of combat and role playing. So just going off on a tangent, I'm not really sure like what I was going on about, but I want my players to have fun. I want them to feel challenged while also feeling like, you know, that it's, you know, it's not a Demon Souls of the DM world, you know, or it's just unbearably difficult for no reason. So,
well, I mean, I think that's the way D&D is generally going now with the new modules that are coming out is more heavy role play, less combat. I've done hundreds and hundreds of adventures. And I think Candlekeep was the first one where, and these are pickup groups through Adventures League. We had a pacifist run. Like we did the whole adventure, didn't kill anything. Like we got done, we're like, wait, did we fight anything? Everybody's like, no, I don't remember fighting anything. DM's like, nope, you guys didn't fight anything. You actually talked your way through everything. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's fantastic. And it was actually, because everything was so heavy roleplay, it was more fun than, you know, kind of your basic combat. Obviously, combat's still fun for a lot of it, but, you know, they've stated that, you know, they're trying to get away from combat all the time and more into, you know, playing your character and having fun with that aspect, but still making it, you know, difficult just in a different way.
No, yeah, and I think that's the key is making it challenging, but in a different way. It's, you know, obviously like combat, you always it's a roll of the dice. But you know, if you're role playing, there's still going to be aspects that you're going to have to leave up to luck. whether it be like a perception check or an intimidation check or whatever it may be. When it comes to the long and short of it, when it comes to an ideal party composition, I would say that it definitely depends on what the goal is of the game. You know, is the goal of the game to have a more traditional D&D experience where it's slanted more toward combat? If that's the case, then, you know, the party compositions that we discussed based on combat is definitely what you would want to consider. If the goal of the game is to do a pacifist run, like Lupus was talking about, or have a role-playing heavy adventure with, you know, four bards, you know, touring through Faerun and solving the mystery who stole from the club's coffers, you know, who stole all the gig money. Then, you know, obviously, you know, your party composition is going to be different. And that's, you know, again, that's the beauty of the game as a whole, is that there's no right and wrong way to play the game. I've mentioned a couple times, you would think having two bards in one party would be wrong. And in some ways, you know, it makes the game more difficult because, like, damn, really wish we had a cleric around or a barbarian of sorts to kind of sort of like, you know, just, you know, knock a hole through the wall. But
now, are those bards of the same faction or are they different factions?
Oh, I can't remember. It's been a while since I've played with them, just due to, you know, personal stuff in everyone's life. But I can't remember now. I'm not sure. But I would say that they're not. But then again, we're like, we're pretty low level at this point. And so,
well, it's like for your adventure, for the touring bards, would you have them all of the same faction or would you have?
Oh,
them...
no. Yeah, they would be separate because, you know, like there'd be like, you know, playing different instruments and like different.
One Harper, one Zentrum, exactly. One Emerald Enclave, one Lord's Alliance.
Exactly. And then, you know, they come together to, you know, form a super group. But yeah, like I said, there's no wrong or right way to play it. You know, it definitely depends on what your goal is when you do play as to what you want your party to look like. But having said that, let's go ahead and start to wrap up. No magic item of the week. That's you know, Crit's, you know, little baby, and you know, I don't want to take that away from him. He can get very possessive and very angry. So definitely don't want to anger the co-host. But once again, we want to thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with our coverage of the Monsters of the Multiverse, the newest offering from Wizards of the Coast. We've gotten some sneak preview looks at it, thanks to Lupus. And there are a lot of monsters. A lot of monsters, and very excited about this. It's available only as part of a box set that comes with Tasha's Cauldron of Everything and Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
And Tasha's Cauldron.
Yeah. Cauldron of Anything. Yeah, I was going to say, like, did I say that right? Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did. Yep.
And, but we will we will be covering that. So thank you so much for joining us. Coffee, thank you so much. We'll be interested to hear how your three-person party is coming along in the next few weeks, in the next few months.
Yeah.
That's all? That's it? Yep.
Yeah. It's been kind of cool because they actually... the topic to go from tangent, but the DM had us actually make level 20 character sheets as well. So for something we did this last session, which was, we kind of had like a flash forward, I guess.
Oh, cool.
So we fought like the two main BBEGs essentially, in like a dream sequence. It was cool.
That does sound pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it.
Like I've had, you know, obviously I've had players roll up, you know, higher level characters, you know, if that's where the adventure starts at, or even higher level characters if you know, as a one off, like, okay, like, you know, you're gonna like this like IRL person isn't here this week. So to kind of make up for that, you know, that missing character, you can play, you know, this character at this higher level, whatever it may be. But I've never had them roll the same character at a higher level. That's interesting.
It was fun.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know how that pans out. And Lupus, of course, thank you so much for everything. Thank you for making me broke damn near with all the stuff you post on the Robots Radio Discord. Like I'm not joking. There's so much that he posts. Some of which, like the $1,600, is it 1,600 or is it 16,000? It's 16,000. It's the $16,000 miniature collection, obviously, I'm not gonna buy. Yeah, but like the, what? I mean, it's a ridiculous amount for sure.
That's enough for a decent used car.
Oh, not even. I mean, that's enough for
a
decent new car. Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, man.
But however, the Dungeons and Dragons Chronicles of Mystra Xbox Live game for $3 is something I've been wanting to buy for a while. Just your basic sort of like Streets of Rage, Double Dragon type, you know, side scrolling beat 'em up with a D&D flair, which is, like I said, it's on Xbox Live, $2.99. You can play it up to four people.
I think that's something. Up to eight people? Online multiplayer up to eight, and it's backwards compatible, so Xbox One and Xbox S and X.
Nice. Yeah, I've been wanting to play that with a couple of friends. Like I said, like it's you know, it's not anything that's gonna revolutionize your video game, break the mold. But like I said, it's like Double Dragon, but you know, with Dungeons and Dragons. It's like Dungeons and Dragons and Dungeons and Double Dragons. I'm going to stop talking because at that point, like once I start making video game puns, you know, it's time to wrap up the show. Well, thank you so much for listening. I have been Sergio. I will always remain Sergio. And next week, we will see you again. Thank you for listening. You have been the best.
Thanks for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with a friend, following us on Twitter at DNDLorecast, or jumping on the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
And that's it. Yeah, Kavi, let us know how that campaign goes. Like I said, like that's I've never even considered that, which is weird because like to this day, me and my best friend Sean, we still talk about Lost, like with all of its flashbacks and flash forwards. Like we never even considered doing that before.
How long did that take to make? I mean, to make a 20th level character from scratch, there's so many feats and abilities and points you have to distribute. I mean, that's gonna just make it a regular character takes a hot minute.
I used D&D Beyond, so all I did was copy the character, then go to edit it, and then bumped up to level 20. So it was fairly easy.
Yeah, but I mean, you still had to for all.
Well, it took a bit of time.
And yeah, okay.
It took a bit of time, not as long as Actually, I end up having to transfer to over to a paper sheet because that's what he wanted. I only put the base stats down. That was really it.
For the season finale of Fumbling 4, I took my Jimmy Really Rad character and bumped him up to 20, which didn't take me as long as I thought it would. Like, I thought, like, I was like, oh my gosh, because I rolled him up at level 10. And so I was thinking, like, this is going to take forever. But I'd already been thinking about, like, what would he be like at level 20? And so it was that much easier to, like, just fill in the gaps. I'm like, all right, well, obviously, like, you know, he's a rogue, and I'm going to add some bard. And at some point, I'm going to add some fighter in. Doing that research into Dritz kind of informed my like how I make characters, because
so you pronounced it right that time.
Well, no, because like someone on Twitter was like the Drizzt pronunciation is spoken by those who like use it to like disrespect him or to like look down on him, and I was like, well, I definitely don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, listening to the audiobooks, they pronounce it Drizzt.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, but I mean, that's only the only reason why I pronounce it that way is, yeah, from the audiobooks. Mm-hmm. But when I heard you guys going, I'm like, oh, like, why don't? Because I pronounce drow improperly.
Or dro?
Dro. I say dro, everybody else says drow, right? And I'm like, but it's like crow. I'm like, okay. But yeah, when I heard you guys going back and forth, I'm like, I'm curious. I'm like, I wonder who's right on that one.
Well, actually, I don't know if I read or if I heard the interview, if it was text or audio, but yeah, Salvatore himself was like, you know, it's either one, you know, like in the example I gave was actually from, like, you know, verbatim. He's like, you have two kids arguing in the hallway. Oh, it's Dritz. No, it's Drizzt. Like, hey, and the third kid comes up, like, what are you guys arguing about? And they're like, oh, these books over here. And like, I've got, you know, three people read my books. And so I win either way. But yeah, like, you know, when you know, when that, I forgot who it was on Twitter, but when they brought up that point about the pronunciation, like, that was enough for me, not just like as, you know, empathetic, but like lore wise to pronounce it Dritz. And that's the kind of thing that I'm really into. But I misspoke. I was like, when doing the research into Elminster, you know, he has all these different levels. Like, he has some levels of rogue, some level of fighter. And that's because those are periods of his life that he spent doing exactly those things. And so it definitely is definitely going to inform how I roll up characters, especially higher level characters.
Well, that's what I was thinking about when you're talking about, you know, groups, like the pickup groups. It's like filling out the class roles, as opposed to you'd have four bards together, like off of Elminster's story, when he was a thief, he was with a bunch of thieves and started a thieves guild, right? To combat the thieves guild that had been started by the mages or the mage lords. When he was a fighter, he was with the brigands who were all knights of Athalantar, and he was a fighter, and there really wasn't anything else. It wasn't until he was with an adventuring group, and they were pretty much two clerics and a bunch of fighters and one rogue, and he was the only caster, and he was a cleric, or she was at the time,
right?
And they had no idea that she wasn't a wizard because of the group. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, typically it would be a lot of the same type hanging out together, as opposed to seven unique individual types.
Right, yeah, exactly.